wing as swing space, the challenge of what do you do with people in the center wing while you're renovating it will become a real challenge, but we'll cross that bridge. We've got some things in mind, but unfortunately, renovation of our science facilities, this is now on phase four for nearly 15 years in the process. This is the last step. The budget that the governor has proposed includes money for the $48 million project to renovate the center wing and build a new planetarium, but we'll see whether that's forthcoming. What I wanted to do was just take, since the governor's address was Tuesday night, this is a summary of what his remarks included Tuesday night as it relates to higher education and specifically to WKU. But I want to put it in context. I got a faculty staff all email going out probably in the morning, but only devote a paragraph or so to this, and obviously that doesn't lend itself to Q&A much, so if we can do that for a second here, I would welcome that opportunity. But in a nutshell, as I've told a number of people in the media over the last couple of days, to use a baseball analogy, it's a 9-inning game, and this is just the first inning. And the way the process works, the governor proposes a budget that goes to the House, it goes to the Senate, then Senate and House leadership get together in conference, set the final budget, it goes back to the governor. It's rare that the governor vetoes something. So if the legislature changes something that the governor has proposed, that's normal and common. The total cut to higher education is about $25 million. For us, it's $1.8 million. It's a 2.5% cut. So our challenge over the next 60 days, frankly, will be to try to work with our local legislative delegation to take the lead, but with the leadership in both the House and Senate, to find $25 million somewhere so that higher education doesn't take another budget cut. The presidents and the board chairs met with the governor a week ago, Tuesday. That's when we got a first heads up of what he was thinking. And clearly his effort is to try to free up money to direct to public education K through 12. Well, I'm a little bit frustrated, is the good way to say it, I guess, cleaning it up a little bit. With that, because in the governor's State of the Commonwealth address, he talked about cradle to career. He talked about this seamless educational enterprise. And, you know, you got the higher education partner and the public education partner. Well, I'm pretty uncomfortable with cutting one partner so you can give the other partner more money. Now, I don't want to get in a squabble with public education. That's not something we need to be doing. We don't need to be doing something that takes money away from them. But we will work this as best we can. All the universities, all the presidents will work this as best we can for the remainder of the legislative session to try to avoid this. Therefore, I don't want to overreact to another budget cut, but I am absolutely surprised and disappointed by this turn of events because I've communicated it pretty frequently on our campus over the last year or so that I really believe we were at the end of the cutting process as a result of the recessionary environment since 2008. The back sheet on the back of the summary is a bar chart that looks like that. That shows the budget cuts we've endured since 2008. Some $16 million in counting, if in fact there's to be another one this time. So it is a serious matter, and we will do the very best we can on it. So I've summarized the key points that relate to us here on this sheet. And in a nutshell, we're expecting to take about a $2 million hit from KERS and a mandated increase to the pension fund that relates to our employees. Now, the good thing the governor did do, and Chairman Porter and I brought this up when the board chairs and presidents met last Tuesday, was we could use some relief in the pension fund because there's a $100 million legislative endeavor to balance the pension fund statewide. And I said, if we could just get some relief as part of that, that could relieve us of the hit we're taking on our contribution to KERS, it would help. Following that, he did include in his budget a 50% inclusion for higher education in that pension fund solution, which to us means about $1.3 million. So That's a good thing. That reduces our obligation to KERS that we'll have to pay in next year's budget and going forward. That's a positive thing. There was funding for the Gatton Academy of $2 million recurring that will come into our base budget to grow the academy from 120 to 200 students. And that's something that we had asked the governor to do, and he has responded. That doesn't help our operating budget. That doesn't help any of the other things we've got to deal with in our operating budget, but it's good for the academy to grow it. And we will raise private money to do the brick and mortar to add 80 beds, 40 on each end of that building, to expand the Gatton Academy. And that effort is well underway, and that's going to be about a $10 million price tag. That's going to get done. In fact, that's already pretty well in hand. So just understand that the Gatton Academy new funding or brick-and-mortar funding from private gifts won't affect the university budget much at all. It looks like $2 million coming to us, but it's to take the cost of the Gatton Academy up to 200 students. A good thing. Commonwealth College is the Adult Learner Initiative. Provost Emsley has taken the lead role on that. Beth Lavis and her team with DLO are very much engaged. That's probably going to be a couple $1 million. I'm not sure exactly that it's been fully determined yet. That will come to CPE. We'll share in that. It'll mainly be for infrastructure with online procedures related to better access for adult learners in Kentucky. We'll be in the middle of that. We will benefit from that in some yet-to-be-determined fashion. And then the Bucks for Brains was the governor's proposing $60 million in Bucks for Brains, matching money that would match private gifts for endowment for faculty, professorships, and chairs. We would get about $2.5 million of that. That's good, although, frankly, the fact that $50 million goes to UK and U of L, two-thirds to UK, one-third to U of L, and the other university split $10 million, I'm not at all happy about. But I don't want to oppose it because we will get $2.5 million out of it. But that will be money that will go into our foundation that will match private gifts for endowed faculty positions, just like the Bucks for Brains philosophy has been since 1998. Whether or not that gets funded yet to be determined. New capital projects. I don't think that there will be $520 million in capital projects funded across higher education, but we will do everything we can to make sure that our $48 million project stays in. We'll see how that unfolds, but that's a lot of debt that the state would take on. But we'll do our best to keep our number one priority funded. Agency bonds, where universities pay the debt service on a bond it issues. We were given an authorization for two projects, expand the Preston Center and a new mid-campus parking structure. There has nothing been done in that regard. Whether that materializes in the next 2 years, in the 2014 to 2016 biennium, is yet to be determined. I doubt that it will. If student government wants to get behind doing something to expand the Preston Center and create that parking structure, we would entertain that possibility. So that's just simply authorization should we be in a position to want to pursue that. That would require a student fee for those projects to materialize. That wouldn't be something that we would take on in our normal budgeting process. So that is very much yet to be determined. But you can see there's $703 million authorized for agency bonds. Most of that won't materialize, but it is authorized should we choose to do so. So that's about as quick a summary of what the governor's budget entailed. So we'll do our best to keep the good things in and try to avoid the budget cut, but that won't be determined for another 60 days or so when it becomes final in mid-April. I'd be glad to answer any questions about that. That I can, or anything else that for that matter, but I felt like it was important to keep you informed of a rather important process that will be unfolding in Frankfort. In terms of our own budget, there are five variables that are critically, and they'll either be neutral or negative. the budget reduction, whether it happens or not, is one. What we will do with our fixed cost increases, we will have probably $3 to $4 million in fixed cost increases that are just normal in our every year's budget process that we'll have to fund. The KERS mandate, which for us will be, we're guessing now, to be about an $800,000 rather than a $2 million obligation that we'll have to cover. There will be some type of compensation variable. Long way to go. Have no idea what yet, and it'll likely be modest, but we're going to do everything we can to make sure that there's some type of combination of salary and benefits variable in this next year's budget. And then the revenue side of that is, of course, a tuition increase and what it will entail. And we've reached a point where anything we do from a tuition standpoint will be modest. Last year we sought a 5% increase. We're authorized to do a 3% increase. I would project that we probably be in that 3% range. It could go higher if this budget cut stays, because CPE will probably authorize a slightly higher tuition increase if we all have to take a 2.5% cut, all the universities. So that's what I would predict in terms of a tuition increase. 3 to 4% would be my prediction. Long way to go before that will be defined as well. But CPE will put those parameters in place probably over the next month or so. As I read what's on the CPE agenda coming up. So you got 4 or 5 negative variables and 1 positive variables from a revenue standpoint. I'm not suggesting that a tuition increase is a positive, but when you look at expenses and revenues, that's what we'll be dealing with. The point of that is, the fifth one is enrollment. We had an enrollment decline in the fall. Logic and simple math would suggest that hole will carry over into the spring, so we'll have some type of shortfall in the spring. We're working hard to do that. There are about 100 new international students that arrived this week, new first-time international students. That will help. But we don't know yet what that enrollment variable and the resulting financial impact will be for the spring semester and the budget going forward for next year. So we'll factor all those things in, because of enrollment, because of a potential budget cut, because of the KERS mandate, because of fixed cost increases, and because of a compensation variable, those are 5 things that will be a draw on the budget against 1 revenue enhancement, a modest tuition increase. Yes, there's going to be some type of budget reduction scenario on this campus to make sure we have a balanced budget for the next fiscal year. Don't know how much, don't know what, don't know where, but that's a reality given what I'm describing for you of the key variables that will have to be factored in to that budget setting process. And it's important that you be informed about that, that you anticipate that, and have some voice in how that unfolds over the next couple of months, and there'll be a lot of discussion about that going forward. Gordon's already putting a faculty advisory group. Is that the right terminology? Together? Okay. That will advise the provost in that regard. So lots to be done this spring. I guess my most important message to you all is keep doing what you're doing in our classrooms and in our labs and in our libraries and on our regional campuses and other countries and other continents and on and on and on. You've got to keep doing what you're doing, and we're going to do our best to manage these variables in everyone's best interest. And that's the way the universities have to work. And Ann Mead and Robin Taylor, well, all of our vice presidents will be fully engaged in these dynamics. The deans will be working toward these ends, and we'll just keep you informed as the process unfolds. So before we go over and board up the North Wing, anybody have any questions, thoughts, observations, suggestions? Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm Don. I think from my memory serving correctly, November, we had a meeting with you shared that there's a different
Thank you. Great point. Good memory. Good point. The process for the CPE, the Council on Post-Secondary Education, to create a new funding model for higher education begins this month. And I've already got a file assembled of the input that I will have into that process. And frankly, the chart on the back page of this handout is going to be one of my key talking points, because we're watching our state appropriation per student continue to drop as our enrollment has grown, and therein lies the problem. Campuses that have not grown have sustained a higher level of state appropriations per student, and I'm going to seek, good word, something like the SEEK formula that K through 12 uses on a per student basis, because that's their argument going into this legislative session. We've watched our SEEK formula drop in state funding per student, and they're trying to get it back to 2008 levels. I'm suggesting higher education have some type of a minimum number that all institutions can expect to get in the budgeting process per student. And I'm going to advocate that everyone should be at least at the average of their peer group of institutions. And we're about $1,000 below the average for the comprehensive universities in Kentucky. And the CPE, this is resonating. Northern Kentucky University and Western Kentucky University are taking the lead in this discussion and really pressing on this and getting a lot of heads nodding affirmatively in the arguments that we are making. And the important thing for us in this is, if a new model is created that takes the existing $950 million or so funded for higher education and redistributes it based on an equitable formula based on state appropriations per student, we will win in that equation, because ours will go up, Northern Kentucky's will go up, and some will come down. And that's going to be the contentious part of this, as you can imagine. But our thought is to redistribute the current base and then redistribute any future revenue based on that same formula. And so this is going to be a long, difficult process going into the 2016 to 2018 state biennium. That's the target date. Get this all in place by 2016. But we stand to benefit from a new funding formula based on a more equitable appropriation per student. Does that help?
Bottom line, yep. We have to wait a minute.
Right. Yeah, well, we have to wait until the end of the legislative session when the state budget is passed for the coming biennium, and the legislature gets the final word on that. Well, the governor can veto, but the governor, what the governor, I don't know if we have, I'll say it anyway. What the governor is trying to do, he's a politician. He would like for a lot of people to get out and fight for new revenues, tax reform, gaming. Pick your new revenue source. He would like allies in fighting for new revenues, because if we can generate new revenues, these cuts go away and we might even get some additional funding. And you know what? I've become an advocate for tax reform. I'm not a particular great fan of gaming, but you know what? If higher education is a beneficiary, you bet. So there's a lot in play here in addition to just presenting the budget. But we won't know until the end of the legislative session when the budget is final, and we won't know on a new funding model for probably a year or 18 months.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yes, sir. So if you go back to CARA 2000,
yes,
when the SEEK first came in,
yes,
one of the principles that they did was that rather than taking from the ones that were low, and giving to the low, they leveled up the ones who were low to the ones. So that required new funding rather than just a reassessment. If they do that, the new CPE model would probably have to wait until there were more revenue. And I don't know whether they would take away to level up, but rather, you know, to redistribute as opposed to just leveling up.
That's a great insight, and thank you. I'm going to make that note and include it. But you're right, that could take longer to achieve.
But it's very difficult to sell redistribution as opposed to a leveling up.
You're right, because then you got a lot of fighting going on, and people playing offense and people playing defense, and you know it gets pretty messy. But
that's the way it worked out in 2000 with public schools.
Thank you. That's very helpful. I'm gonna write that down. That process is just, in fact, the first meeting hadn't even been called, but it's supposed to, the conversation is supposed to begin this month.
A whole lot easier to sell if Northern and Western catch up rather than take it away from everybody else.
You're right.
But, if you don't have the money, I'm not
sure I'm that patient, but yeah, thank you. That's very helpful. Good insight. Anything else? Thank you all very much. I appreciate you letting me come and share this with you. It's important that we stay informed and stay engaged, and I'll keep you posted as things unfold. Thanks.
Thanks, Dr.
Rosa. All right. Thank you all. And I'm sure we'll hear more, and we'll get the email as well to the faculty all soon. So back to our regularly scheduled agenda. We do have a few things on there for today, and the first order of business is the minutes from December. And so can I get a motion to approve the minutes? Second? And is there any discussion on the December meeting minutes? Yes.
Would it be possible to revise the minutes under new business where it simply says colonnade courses were approved, to actually list the individual courses that were approved so that they're part of the official record of the meeting? Because I know possibly SACS will want to review those. Also, the Colonnade Committee we've already had to come back to the Senate meetings to remind ourselves exactly when things had their final approval.
Okay, yeah, it was on the agenda. They are listed individually on the agenda.
They are on the agenda, but in the
minutes. But we can get them listed in the minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, that won't be a problem. So, motion to approve as amended. All right. Is there any further discussion on that? Okay, hearing no objection, then all those in favor of approval of the minutes as amended on the floor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. All right. Thank you. Minutes are approved as amended. We'll get those changes made. I don't have any report for you in particular today. We've got a lot of things that are coming up this spring, and so just kind of keep your eyes and ears open. We've got a lot of work to be done, and I'm sure that our regent will talk to us a little bit about some of the things that are going on, but we've got a lot of things going on with Senate that we're going to need to deal with over the coming semester, including benefits, talking a little bit more about benefits. We've got our Faculty Welfare Committee, in discussions about that, including the transition to colonnade, which is happening for this fall, including the new faculty governance proposal, which is still out there, and SEC is determining what to do with that. So still a lot of things out there. Our Vice Chair, Jennifer Hanley, I will go ahead and – do you have anything to say?
Just a reminder that the at-large college elections will be held this year in February. Right now they're scheduled for the last week of February, so your department chair will be getting an email the next day or two asking for nominations. Please pay attention to whether or not you've termed out or not. If I know all of you are dying to be here, but if you're done, you get to have a break. So thank you very much. And as also secretary today, if you could please just say your last name if you're making a point. I'm trying to type as fast as I can, and it's hard to look up and type at the same time. So thank you.
So, yes, microphones and first and last names, please. And thank you to Jen for playing secretary as well as vice chair today. She has on two different hats. And so since our secretary is out today, we will move on to Molly. Do you have anything for us?
No report.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Eric, do you have anything for us from AAUP? Okay, and then we'll move on to our advisory portion, and so Regent Minner.
Oh, I got one.
I got one.
Okay. And we will probably have, COSPL will probably kick into gear given what's going on in higher education. So, right, exactly. So we'll be in touch about all of that. And if you're not in the habit of reading, you can get a really good picture of what's going on in Frankfurt if you're reading the Courier Journal and the Herald Leader. And I like to read them both to get the big picture. But certainly the next 60 days are crucial for us. So, you know, just check that out. Tomorrow the Board of Regents meets. It's another January. It's the week before classes and the day before the Board of Regents has the first quarterly meeting. And apparently it's time for what has become our annual tradition, which is the discussion of yet another new head coach's contract. And I think that 3 times in 3 years officially makes this a tradition, don't you? I think so. So here in the faculty ranks, this has sort of become like Festivus. It's time for the annual airing of the grievances. So here we go. If you want to air the grievances, you got to read the contracts. So the contract is posted on the board's agenda, and here are the high points. Coach Jeff Brohm will receive $600,000 base salary and all the usual incentives that are always written into every head coach's contract since we joined FBS. There is a large buyout. For the first time, there's a non-compete clause, just in case somebody gets any ideas about following Bobby Petrino to Louisville. But perhaps an equally important story is the jump in the assistant coaches' salaries for men's football. And those aren't posted yet. There have been a few of them that have appeared in the newspapers, but they're not posted. That's going to show up on the April board agenda. Here's what I think I'm going to see when I see the April board agenda. I think we're going to see that this is probably going to come close to or clear the $1 million mark for the first time for coaching staff. And just the one assistant coach hire that was in the paper was $135,000. Now, if you go down the budget, that's getting into what some deans make. There are highly placed people in academic affairs who are in that salary band. And are these really equivalent positions given the fact that this is a university that we're running here? It's not the NFL, folks. I mean, you know, it's not. And when the dust settles at the April board meeting again, I think we're going to see that payroll without precedent in a year that you've just heard. By April, the picture should be pretty clear about what the budget cuts are going to look like unless the session goes on until May. So once again, whether or not the new coach is a good coach or the players like him or he doesn't have any baggage, and those are all good things, the point remains the same. We cannot afford this. We've just heard what the budget cut is going to be. The situation grows more serious every year. This time last year, I wasn't talking about an enrollment drop. But this year, that is a factor that's in play. The recent, mostly disappointing news from the governor's budget speech means we really do need to factor all of this into the decision. When the dust settles, I feel extremely confident that nobody's going to be asking that particular program to take a cut, and that's not okay. So, to make it short and sweet, WKU continues to make long-term financial commitments to athletics, a shift that escalated last year, but of course it began in 2006 when the Board of Regents approved the move to FBS football and all the promises of the increased ticket and television revenue that would make this a bold step towards something. I have 3 data points for you, and these will all be in my Regent report, so you can look at them. In fact, tons of you have sent me one of these links. Here's where we are in 6 years. Athletic spending at WKU has increased by 38%. Between 2006 and 2011, it's up to $22.3 million annually. The source for that is USA Today. And this is a clear shift toward trying to be big time on a small time budget. Our athletic department is not self-supporting, as you know. It is subsidized by student athletic fees, even though that is no longer indexed to the HEPI, still represents 63% of the budget. Okay, so the financial fortunes of this athletic department are not entirely revenue dependent. In fact, they're linked to enrollment. So everybody else who's linked to enrollment, then we're going to be asked, I feel pretty certain, that we need to take our lumps and take a cut. But I don't think that conversation is going to be happening in the most expensive program on this campus. We all know that CPE considers any fees. So this discussion that was just broached with the student regent, CPE considers any student fee to be equivalent to a tuition increase. So you put a fee on something to build a building, then you can't use that money for tuition to pay your faculty and staff, pay benefits, keep your lights on. Okay, there are always costs to this stuff, and we always act like there aren't. Here's another stat. This is the link that tons of you sent me. This is the link to the Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics. And if you haven't checked that out, I'll send you the link. But Western Kentucky University, and this ran in the Lexington Herald Leader, athletics received $36,238 per athlete from the school in 2011. Okay? So $36,000. Rank and file students received $11,695. Okay? Huge funding gap. Why wouldn't they be mad? I'd be mad. I don't know why you're not rioting. I really don't. How do you become a better university when you have this kind of disparity? It's the biggest disparity in the state. Again, Knight Commission tells the story, and the Herald Leader lasered that out. People that we want to enroll at this university read the Lexington Herald Leader. Stuff doesn't look good. Finally, according to the Delta Cost Project of the Association of Public and Land-Grant Universities, they say salaries and compensation account for roughly one-third of athletic spending at all D1 institutions, while spending on facilities and equipment account for 20%, while smaller institutions rely heavily on student fees to cover athletic expenses and their counterparts. Again, there's a cost. We pay it. Our students pay it. So, again, when the board looks at this stuff, we now have an enrollment piece that we have to look at. This should cause alarm for anybody reading the balance sheet. And I continue to be concerned that apparently it doesn't. But enrollment decline, revenue stream is increasingly dependent, as the president just told us, on recruiting international students and competing for out-of-state students for whom there is much competition on the market. These are early days for state budget discussions, but it's not the brightest picture. Our expenditures for debt service remain long-term obligations, and we now use one student tuition funding stream from a certain group of international students to fund debt on the Honors College International Center bond. That's a debt for the next 20 years. That's a revenue stream we cannot put anywhere else. And none of the concerns which the faculty raised in the fall, and you've raised great concerns, none of them have been answered yet. I hope that we can fund benefits, and I look very forward to the Faculty Welfare Committee's reports. Last year's compensation adjustment consisted of making the previous year's temporary raise permanent. That's a good thing, but it's been eaten up by the benefits increase. We all know that. So as we continue to fall behind, and the small raise doesn't even cover the cost of living, we still find ourselves in this race to the top, right? We have to pay these people what they would demand on the open market so that they can, you know, so that our athletic program can be competitive. And I just want to apply that standard to us. It's just that simple. And I don't know why this is so hard to get through. It's not the only institution in the country where we're having these discussions. But, you know, as your parents used to say, just because they're doing it, you know, just because that other guy's doing it doesn't mean this is a really good idea. So it's not a really good idea. We continue to fund education over entertainment over education. I'm sorry, that was just wishful thinking. and the cold medicine. And we got to reverse this immediately. And, you know, we've been getting little bitty wake-up calls. I mean, this is the alarm going off at this point. I mean, this really is. So while the headline-making head coach has moved on, to no one's surprise, our decisions, such as this year's contract, continue to demonstrate that if we pass this, and don't be disappointed when it passes tomorrow, overwhelmingly, but it shouldn't, because it demonstrates, if we pass it, that WKU is still committed to funding entertainment at all costs, even as enrollment flattens and declines, debt load expands, and new sources of new and existing revenue, because this year it's a cut from the state, and I hope it doesn't happen, but I'm not optimistic. So I'll continue to emphasize to the board what seems obvious and imperative at this point, that WKU has to put money into the academic mission and recognize the faculty and staff who fulfill it are as important as the brick and mortar and extracurricular concerns. Because when funding is scarce, you get back to the basics, you cut to the essentials, and what we do is essential. It is the, and it's also the key to the financial future. You know, I hate to reduce it to those terms, but we can, and it's true. So we have fallen into what our Academic Affairs Book Club selection, Jeffrey Salingo's College Unbound, he has a term for this, and he calls it the concierge model of higher education, the idea that you build the amenities and the entertainment to attract students. It's not working as well anymore. So we're smart people. We need to regroup. For these reasons, I can't support the contract before the board. Funding entertainment over education is the wrong thing to do, is the wrong thing last year, is the wrong thing the year before, and it is definitely, obviously, the wrong time to do it. So let's focus on what we have to do if we're really serious about being a leading university with international reach. Thanks.
Thank you very much. As a follow-up, I would just like to say I did ask President Ransdell if he could provide us at some point in the near future with kind of a plain English top five, top ten budgeting priorities for the institution. I think that would be an important thing to see, and I know that, you know, we talk a lot about priorities and we talk a lot about budget, but it doesn't. This is me personally, so I'll kind of step down from chair for just a second just to say, I can stay as chair and say this. Me personally, I don't think that our budgeting is aligning with our mission.
No, it's not. And that's certainly what all of you tell me. And I'll post all of this on the Senate website. But, you know, when you play with all three of these websites, it's a powerful picture, and it's not the right picture. And ours is the most out of whack in the state. I think the thing that's stunning is when you compare to the other institutions in the state, ours is by far the most out of whack.
Okay, yes.
Is the old budget council still in existence? I mean, budget council that that the university used to have with faculty reps on it? Oh, so
done. Call them a session?
February, okay. So, well, then maybe Dr. Emsley can explain. I thought the president mentioned something about a task force was being created, but why wouldn't the budget council be the group consulted?
Well, we will ask for that within Dr. Emsley's report. So, Provost Emsley, we will turn it over to you. And we would hope that you could be academics' largest advocate coming into this budget reduction and certainly stand up and say, you know, we're not going to take the cuts. That's what we're going to hope for.
Let me start slow and finish with a little more emphasis, perhaps. I don't usually do this in the podium, so there's a clue. Recommendations from the last Senate meeting from Graduate Council 101A from UCC, recommendation number 2, both approved. Recommendation number 3, policy on declaring a major, the 60-hour rule and the preferred period. That is currently being sent to SGA for its comment. And recommendation 4 on colonnade courses approved with all the courses intact. As Patty said, what we do is really important. I completely and absolutely concur. One of the things we do is we give grades. And I want to applaud the faculty. I have a report from the registrar here that as of the noon deadline for grades on Tuesday, December 17, Out of 84,000 grades, only 255 were missing. That's a 99.7% success rate turning into grades, and I applaud and commend folks for that. I'm sure the students would join in doing so. Let me see. The Board of Regents tomorrow, it does meet, and in addition to, you know, contract for coaches and so on, academic affairs, part of that, the stuff that came up in academic affairs, is fairly straightforward. We have three new programs, including a BA in criminology and a couple of undergraduate minors, and we have the sabbatical leave requests and a couple of emeritus faculty appointments. So that's the academic affairs board. We also have a presentation on our MapWorks software that identifies at-risk students to aid in retention, and a presentation from Wiedemeyer and Albert Meyer on the Green River Preserve. So that's at 9 a.m.-ish. It's on my calendar. It's approximately 9 a.m., not sure why, in the usual Regents Room. We'll talk a little bit about enrollment. That is one of the key variables, and the glass, to me, is always at least three-quarters full. So let me try and shine a little light on the enrollment picture, and I mean bright light. The winter enrollment, first of all, the books are closed and we are up 69 students. That's 3% over last year's winter enrollment. And that's in absolute terms. That's a 6% increase in the ratio of winter term enrollment to fall enrollment. So more and more students are enrolling in the winter term, especially freshmen and sophomores. So that bodes well for the future. I just looked at today's enrollment numbers for the spring. Now, let me try and explain this. Last year, we had a spring census number of whatever it was. And you can look at the enrollment today relative to that final number, and it's 83.4%. And that may sound low, but last year at this time, it was 83.0%. So the retention rate of students to date is 83.4% of the students who were in the fall term have already enrolled for the spring term. Last year that was 83 and grew to 90-something. So if that trend continues, the retention rate from fall to spring will be up. And that's not a big surprise to me because, as I said at the beginning of the fall semester, one of the key things about this year's fall student body, especially freshmen, is the number of students in the cohort. It's the largest cohort we've ever had. That's first-time, full-time, baccalaureate-seeking students. And they are more likely to be retained than non-cohort students that are not full-time or not baccalaureate-seeking. So far, that's trending well. Now, I had the folks in Institutional Research run some models for me. I call it move the movie one frame forward. Take the fall enrollment picture, apply standard retention and persistence rates to student groups, and predict what the spring enrollment profile would be. And I had to dig down quite a bit, because when you have a fall enrollment profile that is not the same mix of resident students, full-time students, international students, out-of-state students, and so on, the retention rate should be different. And I think we're seeing a little hint of that in the number I just mentioned. I don't want to get too detailed in the numbers, but the bottom line was they did, in fact, predict about a 400-student number drop compared to this time last year, but predicted pretty much a level funding, that the revenue from those students would be about the same as it was last spring. We've also identified some funds that is tuition, or funds that are, whatever it is, but the tuition revenue that we probably don't have to bank toward the Honors International Center building, because the Navitas numbers are looking really, really good. 144 for sure, and 140 is about break-even, and that's right now. So if we add students down the line, we should be able to cover that bond payment with the Navitas tuition differential in real time without the need to forward bank funds, which was tuition revenue collected this year that we did not budget as tuition revenue. And we can now possibly do that. So until the governor's speech on Tuesday, I was feeling pretty good, actually, that we were kind of sort of winning these little battles and making the picture look good. And I'll get to that a little bit at the end as to what I propose to do moving forward. Before I get there, though, I want to reemphasize something I think I said last time. The admissions staff is energized. They are just fired up to put this ship back upright and get those Kentucky resident full-time students back. We are bombarding students with mailings, with emails. We have about 80,000 names of students with appropriate ACT scores living in regions of the country where high school graduation rates are going up, as opposed to the Kentucky that are going down. All those 80,000 students share a Facebook page, and we communicate with them regularly. Campus tours. If you have a student that wants a campus tour, call. The bus is there. If the bus isn't there, we'll find a van. If a student shows up to your department wanting a tour, please find someone who can give them one, ideally another student, because you know the peer advertising is very strong. So I think you're going to see a lot more activity in the enrollment picture, you know, through the ATPs this spring and beyond. There was a student success summit just this morning at South Campus that many of you may have been at, with over 200 folks did attend, where Joelle Carter and her team put on a rather excellent presentation, not only on how to retain students and make them persist, but also on all the wonderful opportunities that we have for students here. You know, research opportunities, study abroad opportunities, student groups to participate in, and so on and so forth. So we need to get the message out. I hate the word product. We don't sell a product. I prefer experience. We have a wonderful experience here, and I think it's important that we get the word out so students can benefit from that experience. Now, as you've heard the previous speakers mention, this is a fairly sort of critical juncture. It seems we're always at a critical juncture at universities. I don't remember when we weren't. The last time I remember in my career where money was flowing like milk and honey was in 1998. I'm not sure what it was like here, but in Alabama, the state appropriation went up by like 14%, and we had an 8% merit raise program across campus. That was it. Since 1981, the first year of the faculty members, the only year I can remember where, you know, dollars of that magnitude were on the table. However, I think this is a particularly critical juncture because we're making very significant advances in our academic program. In the Colonnade courses, we're adding doctoral programs. There's about 10 new academic programs in the works that will eventually come through this body and onto the board. And yes, there are budget challenges, but I would argue there are also budget opportunities. You know, Gary mentioned the Commonwealth College has a $2 million line, and we are poised with DLO and our experience in online learning to be a major player in that. I have about, as I think I indicated, you know, $1.5 million of recurring salary funds that I did not spend this year in order to save some money to address faculty compensation issues should that be necessary to draw from that fund, or we can hire more faculty. And I look at these two charts almost on a daily basis. Number of faculty, professorial faculty per 1,000 FTE students, that's a number that we started off at 33 with a goal by 2018 of 36. The number right now is 36.1. The other chart is median salaries of faculty by rank, and we're not doing as well in that chart. So my attention has focused from the faculty-student ratio element to the compensation of the faculty that are here element, and that's why I deliberately withheld funds that could have hired new faculty in order to provide a reserve to address compensation issues if need be. So, especially what we do is essential, and I don't think I can handle this alone anymore. I really would like some input. Yes, we have a budget council, and it meets, what is it, Eric? It's next week or something? But it's pretty soon. It's like next month. It's okay, I thought it was sooner than that. But anyway, I would like to form my own. Because academic affairs is about 70% of the budget. And some of the decisions we make within academic affairs are, to me, as important as how the money gets distributed amongst the various divisions within the university. And so I'd like to form some kind of ad hoc group to sit down and open up the books. Just tell everybody what the story is. Here's what we have, here's what's in reserve, here's what DLO makes every year. What should we be doing to move the university, the academic mission of the university forward? And as I was thinking of that, and I was writing my self-evaluation for Gary, I thought, well, we could probably use some input in some other areas as well. Space is one. Most universities have a space committee of some form. That a unit that wants to move into new space or trade space for other space has to present their case to a committee The Space Committee at WKU is Jessica Steenbergen, who occasionally talks to me if something interesting comes up. And that's just not appropriate. I think we need to have a faculty group with input from the folks at facilities and so on, advising me on these decisions, which right now space, I would argue, is as valuable a commodity here as dollars. With Thompson North closing as I speak, with various other moves and planned, I think space is going to be very important. As we grow the number of faculty, which we've been doing, we create space problems, and so we have to address them. Recognizing faculty. We'd like to recognize you with dollars. I really would. The dollars I have to do that with are limited, see committee number one. And right now we recognize four faculty with university-level awards each convocation, and we recognize university distinguished professors. We recognize 26 faculty with college-level awards. That leaves a lot of faculty out there doing really, really good things, and I think we need to recognize that, support that, celebrate that. I'd like to have a group discuss with me how we can do that and get the word out that, yes, the university is all about academics and what our faculty are doing with students and so forth. And then the fourth one, which may seem a little bit like pathos, but I had more concerns expressed to me about this than probably the other three put together, and that's the key policy. I'm serious. And so now the key policy, which is causing significant consternation within academia, has been out for about a year and a half, and I'd like to form a group to sit and discuss what potential changes we'd like to make to that. And any others that folks think that would be valuable to have a task force, ad hoc group, whatever, advising the folks in the provost's office what we should be doing. So I'm going to be working probably at SEC to try and establish membership in those committees going forward. And just like the retention task force, now use that as my example. That was formed in 2011, and they made a series of recommendations, and it wasn't that those recommendations were put in a filing cabinet. We took the recommendations and we turned them into implemented policies, procedures, and so forth. And that's what I intend to do with these as well. I did discuss this with Gary. I said, Gary, you have a problem with me forming an Academic Affairs Budget Council independent of the university level budget council. He said, no, go ahead. So I will be doing that in the next week or so. And if you want to volunteer for any of these, please let me know. We'll try and form them very soon and get things moving. Any questions?
I wanted to follow up on the question that Robert asked earlier. When you talk about the academic affairs, internal budget discussion that I presume would then take something to the budget council that's going to convene on February the 13th. The Senate elected two people to represent us on budget issues. We elected Eric Reed and Ethan Shachi, and I think we have a lot of faith in them. And I don't think you can have any kind of discussion without including those duly elected people because, I mean, we all know that Budget Council has functioned for a long time. It didn't used to, though. Budget Council used to be like the legislature. I mean, we really did horse trade. Mm-hmm. And it has become, in the budget cut years, just this rubber stamp where somebody came to the budget and say, everybody good with this? Yeah. But you can't cut out the people who have been duly elected. If you're going to do this, then you have to include them in the discussion.
Did I mention cutting anyone out?
No, okay. The ad hocing of it, it just creates all of these different silos that then might report back to this group. But the truth is, this group represents the faculty. I can see why you get experts on a retention committee. That makes all the sense in the world. Most of this other stuff can be dealt with by folks elected by these people in this room.
Yes, and I said I'd be working with the SEC to form these committees.
All right, thank you, Dr. Emsley. And we'll move on to our SGA regent and Ms. Boca.
Thank you. Hope you all had a great break and great winter term. Last Friday, January 17th, I hosted the Board of Student Body Presidents on campus. From each of the eight student body presidents from the public universities came here, and we discussed what we as students can do during this time of budget cuts for each of our universities, as President Ransdell mentioned, $25 million across in higher education. And so we are currently planning for a rally for retention in Frankfort, Kentucky, in late March. And right now, up until the rally, we are also, in addition to having the rally, having one-on-one meetings with the different legislators from each of our local regions where we are constituents of, to talk to them personally about higher education and what can be done, and you know, sort of a lobbying technique, you know, of what we can do to talk to them about what we as current students need and how these are limiting our resources, how this is truly affecting us. And so that's what our tactics are right now. We're also supporting the CP's current campaign of 15-hour semesters for retention, for each semester having 15 hours, and encouraging students to do that on our campuses to encourage retention. So we'll be doing that through SGA as well. Our first SGA meeting there during the spring semester will be February 4th. We'll be starting the second week. And another thing is I also went to the Kentucky Student Environmental Coalition Conference over break. Sustainability and environmental issues are important to me for the longevity of our campus. And so that's something else that we'll be working on. So that's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Boca. Now moving on to our standing committee reports and recommendations. Graduate Council.
Hi, Plummer.
Thanks, Pat.
You're welcome. On that note, I submit the December 12th Grad Council report for approval.
Okay. Is there any discussion on the Graduate Council report, the report section? Okay. Hearing none, all those in favor of passing the Graduate Council report, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. And moving on to the policy items, Beth?
Hopefully this is still on. I submit the policy with no number, but it's for grad faculty for approval.
Okay. And, it's graduate faculty policy. Any discussion on that? Hearing none, all those in favor of approval, please say aye. Any opposed? Okay. Thank you very much, Beth. Moving on to the University Curriculum Committee, I understand that Ashley's not here. Molly?
I'd like to submit the current UCC report for approval, please.
Okay. Is there any discussion on the UCC report as posted? Okay. Hearing none, all those in favor of approval of the UCC report, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. All right. And there's no report from academic quality, from faculty welfare, or from general education this time around. And we also do not have any Colonnade Committee courses for January meeting. We will have some in February. No old business that I'm aware of. So new business is in order. We have one item for new business, and that is policy 1.5170, full-time staff teaching assignments and compensation. And I'll bring that up here. Hopefully you've had a chance to look at that. Could I get a motion for approval of this policy? Is there a second on that?
Second.
And discussion on this policy 1.5170 on full-time staff teaching assignments. Okay. Hearing no discussion, then all those in favor of approval of policy 1.5170, please say aye. Any opposed? Okay, policy is approved. We had one information item, which was from our previous meeting, and that was the vote that we had. I did send out an email about this as well, and that was our Legislative Advisory Committee election results. So that's the election ballot election that we had during the last meeting, and so we have elected Dr. Minter to be our Legislative Advisory Committee representative for Senate. And so thanks to everybody who was involved in that and everybody who put their name forth for that. Really appreciate it. And we know that Dr. Minter will do a great job of representing us on that. So is there any further business, further information? Okay, motion to adjourn. And all is in favor. We can go back out into the frigid Arctic weather. Thank you very much, everyone.